this time, I would like to introduce our first speaker, Mike C. from New Hampshire.
I'm an addict named Mike. Good morning. I just want to first take a breath, and the reality check is now finally kicking in with me that I'm actually here in California, and I'm with a bunch of family that if I don't know you, you're still family, you know what I mean? And if I haven't gotten to hug you yet, that hopefully that'll happen. It's an honor and a privilege to be up here today, and I'm not going to lie to you and say I'm not nervous, because I am. And I want to thank my higher power for helping me stay clean today, and the World Convention Committee for asking me to speak. This is an excellent opportunity to grow in ways that our literature talks about, you know, lost dreams awakened. You know, we were talking, me and some friends were talking about, you know, the circuit speaker in Narcotics Anonymous, and there was a speaker just the other night that was talking about that too, that, you know, we all like to aspire to be, you know, we have dreams of being like the speaker, you know, I've been around for a number of years and never really had the opportunity to do it other than at my home group or a local group here and there, and that was always a rewarding experience, and it was a really good way for me to get out of myself and to help carry the message, and here we are, you know. I'm freaked out. I'll be honest with you. I'm totally freaked out by this right now. But it's good, you know. The good thing is I ain't high, and I'm doing this straight, no clean, and it's good. I wouldn't want to have it any other way today. I've worked far too hard to be where I am, and I'm sure all you guys can identify with that. The topic is another mind blower for me, open-minded or closed for repairs. I didn't do a lot of pre-meditation or pre-thinking about what I was going to say today. I really am the kind of person that I'm just going to let it come from the heart, and whatever flows, flows. Hopefully I say something that touches somebody. I do know one thing, that it's very clear open-mindedness is one of those spiritual principles that allows us to grow, and there's a reason why it's in our literature. When we read the readings at the beginning of the meeting, it says, you know, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness are three of the principal guiding factors that allow us to grow in these rooms. And open-mindedness is wedged right in between honesty and willingness. And I think they're in that order for a reason, because they kind of go in lockstep with step one, step two, and step three. Step one being more about getting honest with ourselves. Step two being open-minded to a power greater than ourselves. Step three being about the willingness to do the footwork and allow that power to work in our lives. So the open-mindedness part is like, for me, becoming familiar with the power that is greater than myself, and it's certainly not me. And being open to change, and it's about humility. I mean, step two for me is about the humility part of knowing my place in the world and allowing myself to grow, and welcoming that change into my life and trying to incorporate the principle into everyday living. And that's what the steps have done for me. Real brief synopsis of my history. We all know about our using history, but I've been clean for 16 years. I came to Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you. It's just one day at a time. And it's been a journey that has actually blown my mind wide open. But more in the past year, it's been an incredible amount of growth. But prior to that, just that first year was nothing but a struggle, as I'm sure we can all identify with. I got here through the help of intervention of friends who brought me to a detox center, and that's where an H&I outreach came to and presented, and some people spoke, and that's where I got introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. And a few days later, I was at my first NA meeting, which was on a Saturday night in Nashville, New Hampshire. And I came in late, and somebody got up and came over and hugged me. The first thing I did was reach for my wallet, make sure it was still there, because I thought the guy was trying to, you know. But that was me. That was my, you know, no trust. There was no trust whatsoever. I was a single standing person amongst a rubble of wreckage, you know, and I felt like everything had to be done by myself, and that's not the case, and I've been here ever since. And that first year was a struggle. No doubt I did some more research and development on this disease, thinking I could do it a different way, but it turned out that that was not the case. And on March 16th, 1995, that was when I truly surrendered, and I've been here ever since. And it's been a remarkable journey that's been, I'll be honest with you, many years of that journey in recovery and finding a sponsor who is here in this room today and I love dearly, has guided me through the steps. And I've been through one set of steps, and I'm coming back around again. I'm going through a second step, and I'm intertwining them with some tradition writing as well the second time through. And I can look back now and see that the growth that I needed at the time through those through that step work was all based in a lot of it, all of it was open-minded. The willingness to change, the willingness to have some courage to walk through some of the fear and change. And that's not to say that I walked through all fears. This past year for me has been, I have been stifled by fear, and I'll get into that more a little bit later, but just absolutely, my life has been, I've been obstructed from a lot of growth in a lot of different directions this past year, a lot of stuff, a lot of upheaval, and it's not a result of using at all. It's just a result of life on life's terms. And in working some of those steps and all the steps with my sponsor, I found that just abstinence for me does not work. I need to have growth, and growth comes from working the steps. And for me, working the steps means getting a pen or even my computer and just writing it from the step working guide and using other forms of literature from Narcotics Anonymous to get those steps done, review them with my sponsor, and move on. And try to apply them in an everyday life situations. And that's certainly not easy because anybody can just bang out a bunch of questions on a piece of paper. But until you learn how to try to incorporate them and live them on a daily basis, it's a whole different story. And I'm not trying to minimize that or maximize that. I'm just saying it is what it is. We can just answer questions and go through it blindly, or we can take the time in between to learn how to get those principles to work in our life. In everyday society, as we become responsible, productive members of the society in which we live. So let's see. I'm going to be honest with you. The first 15 years of my recovery was like, I'd say it was a gift. It's a gift. The first year is definitely a gift because I was able to stay abstinent and clean and get through that and the chaos, and then the work began, and the rubber hits the road, and we know how that goes. And I was in that first year, I ended up getting married, buying a house, and being prepared to start a family. You know, and they all say, don't make any major changes the first year. I don't know what I was thinking. I can honestly tell you, I just wasn't thinking. And, man. But, you know, when it's pretty sad when my disease was making me steal money from our wedding gifts to, like, go cop. You know, it's just like, that is just sad. That's just sad stuff. But be it as it may, that was another lesson that I had to learn the hard way, and managed to stay clean. And it was crazy. I think a lot of years of that was, I'll be honest with you, my marriage was a hostage-taking situation. I took her hostage. I absolutely took her hostage. I used her as a savior. She saved my ass because a lot of the work I didn't want to do. I wanted someone else to do it for me. And the years rolled by. We had a couple of children together. We lived in this wonderful house with a green lawn. And we looked at each other a few years later and said, you know, this ain't working. So we started going to counseling, trying to figure out what was going on there. That didn't work. But at least we were still open-minded to the fact that we needed some kind of help. And 15 and a half years passed, and we both decided that we needed to stop. What we thought was working was no longer working. I spent those 15 years working on my steps, doing what I needed to do for me, but she was not an addict in recovery. She was one of those normal people. What turned out was that it was a codependent relationship, and I took her hostage, and she became very depressed, and unfortunately it led to us eventually having an amicable divorce this past year. And, you know, I'm grateful that it was amicable, but did I ever see that coming when I got clean? Did I ever see that coming along the journey? No, I never saw that happening. Was it painful? Yeah, absolutely painful. It was probably one of the most painful things that I've ever experienced as a recovering addict and as a human. Those feelings associated with rejection, those feelings associated with no longer feeling a part of, the feelings associated with being a part-time father. That sucks, you know. But it was a decision made by both of us, and it was an informed decision. It wasn't something that was driven by drug use or driven by some other external forces. So this past year has been a year of incredible growth because I've been challenged by that, and I think open-mindedness has guided me, has been the guiding principle this entire year of trying to remain open-minded, trying as best I can to not allow fear to run my life. And I mentioned that before, that I've been at times absolutely stifled by fear to the point where I will crawl underneath my sheets in bed and I will not get out. You know, it's not about depression. It's more about fear. It's all fear-based because of lack of faith. And I can tell on myself today because not only do I see that, but other people that are close to me pointed out to me, people that are really close to my heart that have helped me along this path, all of you guys in this room and in this fellowship. I've been, and I'll be honest with you, the pen for the step that I'm working on now, I'm actually working on my third step, has been kind of put down a little bit so that I can journal on some of this stuff and get some more help from other external resources. Like I have a therapist that helps me along with other things. And, you know, I'm doing what I need to do to go external to help me move forward. And I'm not saying that this fellowship can't give me everything I need, but I'm an addict. I want more. You know, I want to get as much help as I can get to move forward because, you know, the rewards that come from doing that work, I know what they are. I've had that reward come to me through the step work over the years, even though a lot of that has been like kind of coasting through it and getting through what I need to get through just to move on to the next one. But here we are, faced with the reality of some severe pain. You know, pain has been an incredible motivator for me for this year. And I hate to say that because I thought, you know, I heard always people share about that all the time, that how pain can be a wonderful motivator, but it really sucks being in an emotional space that you're just not comfortable with. And I guess, you know, it took me a number of years to get to that point where I was in writhing pain, to actually pick up the pen and do some work and talk to my sponsor about specific things and work on a specific step that I'm not actually physically working on at the moment so I can move through a character defect or get past that shortcoming, you know, turn it over to my higher power so I can move on. And I want the results real quick. You know, I want to be able to feel better faster. And that doesn't happen because it's in God's time. It's not in my time. And I understand that. After being around all these years, I understand that no matter how hard I try to get past a shortcoming, it doesn't mean it's going to be gone. You know, I've got some incredible shortcomings that I thought would never, ever, just stuff. When I first did my first fourth step and I did my inventory and my sixth step and taking a look at what's there, there's stuff that is now on there that was never there from years past. You know, there's stuff that I'm finally starting to crack the shell on and take a look at what's inside. And I'm starting to peel that onion. And as I peel that onion, I start to cry. And, you know, and honestly, my whole entire life, I have never cried. I've never been a guy that cried or showed my emotions because that's the kind of family I grew up in. I was shown that crying was not a thing to do, or to hug or to hold somebody was not a thing to do in my family. And that mold has been broken thanks to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm able today now to feel empathy, which I never knew I even had the capability of doing. And I like the analogy of peeling that onion, because as we move forward, I truly believe as we move forward with improving ourselves, we're taking those layers off and the tears start to come down. And I have never cried more in my entire life than I have in this past year. It's been an incredible, incredible experience to finally feel. You know, I guess even though I put the drugs down 16 years ago, part of me was still numb. Part of me was still not completely in the moment. Part of me was still living in fear and not having complete faith. And I'm still far from being perfect, but I am aware today through what has been revealed to me by the step work, by my higher power, by the people that I love in my life that are sitting in this room, that I can grow beyond the small shell that I look at myself as. And oftentimes I go to a point where, and I think everybody can identify with this, self-hatred is something, you know, that triangle of self-obsession, you know, that our literature talks about. I go to self-loathing real easy. It's an easy place for me to go right into when I get all angry at what's going on around me and I can't be in the moment and accept what is. I turn inward and I get mad at myself, you know. And when I get mad at myself, that self-loathing just rips me apart from the inside. And it's so easy for me to remain in that space and forget about all it takes is maybe one or two serenity prayers or just a quick hello, God, please help me. I'm like freaking out here. And I can get out of that space eventually, you know. So that's what I've been working on a lot lately is trying to remove the fear but not displace it completely, just accept that the fear gets replaced by faith if I allow the process to happen. You know, getting out of my own way is one of the hardest things I've had to do this past year. And again, you know, if I allow that higher power, who I choose to call God, to work in my life, my sanity will be restored. I will come to a point where I see different levels of open-mindedness. I see different levels of sanity slowly coming back into my life as time goes on. That I've never seen before, you know, I've never experienced before. And it's truly, it is a level of freedom that only I could have if I stay in these rooms in Narcotics Anonymous, you know. I was going to give I was going to talk a little bit more about the steps, but I'm just letting it flow. And I have no agenda, and I like not having an agenda. I kind of like going with the flow. And I don't know where any of that came from, but I'll be honest with you. I know where it came from. It came from the heart. You know, my best friend who's sitting in the front row here and my partner told me to let the brain shut off and let the heart do its thing this morning. And, you know, her guiding words is the reason why I'm allowing this to happen and not, like, getting in the way. And that's such a gift. It's such a gift to be able to listen and hear people today and not get so self-absorbed, because that's where this disease loves me to be, self-absorbed to the point where I am stifled by fear and I cannot no longer move forward. And to be free of that, you know, that's part of the gift of having the obsession lifted once we stay around in these rooms long enough is not only do we lose the obsession to use, the obsession to be self-absorbed also gets lifted. I wouldn't say it completely goes away, but it's to the point where we can now be honest with ourselves. We can now be open-minded to allow a higher power in, and then we could be willing to do some work to allow the change to take place. The gifts of recovery are continue to happen in my life today. I mean, like I said before, just being here is such a blessing. To be in front of all my family is such a blessing. That divorce I went through this past year ripped me apart to the point where it exposed me to make me like a raw nerve ending, where I felt a lot of feelings that I never even knew existed. And I was going way back to the beginning. I was adopted. I was put up for adoption at 3 months old. And my adoptive parents, who live in Massachusetts, are absolutely wonderful, truly a blessing. They're now well into their 80s. They're getting senile. My mom is having symptoms of dementia. It's kind of, and I'm an only child, so my latest task has been to like try to do as much as I can for them, to be there for them today. And I'm not complaining, because it is a gift to have them in my life. And I will be there until they're no longer, and that's okay. Part of that, this divorce process and this open wound that has been, you know, I've been made into this nerve ending, this raw nerve ending, has exposed that I had no longer have a risk involved to go find my true blood family. So just a few months ago, I went through the agency that put me up for adoption, and asked them to try to find my birth parents, and they quickly located my birth mom. And I finally had a reunion with her after 46 years. Yeah. And she's a rock and roller just like me. And she's 66 years old. She put me up. She put me up for adoption when she was 20. She only lives about an hour away from me, you know. And I also found out that I have a half brother, half sister, and a niece and a nephew. And they're just absolutely wonderful. And And when they all found out that I'm alive and they wanted, you know, that I was looking for them, they all fell to their knees and they all had that feeling of sense of relief and also a sense of gratitude that we talk about regularly. I stay in touch with them. We're having another full reunion with my adoptive parents coming up in a couple weeks. Lots of food, lots of pictures. But it explains a lot about, you know, me. I was able to find out that my birth father still doesn't know that I exist. My birth father's family are a bunch of addicts, so that explains a lot about me. And it's nice to find that out because, my adoptive parents, everybody agrees maybe for the most part that addiction's not a learned behavior. You know, it's probably mostly inherited, and it was real good clarity for me to find out that that's in fact where the lineage comes from. My birth mom is not an addict, and she's, like I said, she's a rock and roller, and she's got a lot of spunk, just like I do. And so that closure and that I don't know, I think a part of me years and years ago, I was kind of closed-minded to the idea of finding out about that. I didn't want to know who I really was. I'll do some step work. I'll take a look at my inventory. I'll try to change some character defects and shortcomings. I'll do a daily inventory, because that's what we do here. But deep inside, did I really, really want to find out more about myself? I'm going to be honest with you. No. You know, I'm kind of still scared about what really makes me tick. I mean, the steps do reveal who I am, piecemeal, a layer of the onion at a time. But, again, having opportunity, having nothing to lose to take that next step to find out some more bloodlines about myself is a wonderful gift that I would have never have done if I didn't have this fellowship in my life. For that, I thank those who have stood behind me and helped. It's been a cheering session for me. You know, I never had one, never had a cheering section, and I do, you know, and it's great. Part of that is the process of intimacy and letting people in, and I've been real hard with that. Because of my adoptive nature, I'm going to tell you right now, I've got this primal wound that my entire life has been based on rejection, so I will do everything I can to reject you first before you reject me, because that is what is truly at the core of my onion. Someday I'll figure that all out, but right now I can acknowledge it for what it is and try to work on not having that happen. I'm a tough cookie to get to know intimately because there's a lot of fear there. And I think that, you know, as I move forward in recovery and still continue to work on my steps and my traditions, I will be able to grow in a direction that allows that onion to be revealed. The center core, the true nature of Mike will be revealed, you know. And I've seen people in these rooms do that. I've seen it happen in their lives. I've seen the miracles one at a time take place. And I think it all comes down to just remaining open-minded to letting it happen and not shutting down and refusing to allow that change to occur because those lost dreams do awaken. Thank you for letting me share.
Mike again. Good job. Right on. Yay. And I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Jenny from Colorado.
I'm Jenny. I'm an addict. Can you hear me? I'm a little short. Like here. Okay. Is that better? Okay. Well, this podium's not tall enough. I usually hide behind the podium, and all you can see is, like, the half of my eye, maybe my bang. I can't believe that I'm up here. I can't believe that I am. It's an honor to be speaking at the World Convention of Narcotics Anonymous. I cannot believe it. This is my fourth World Convention. My first World Convention was with my best friend who is here today, who was very instrumental in me getting clean and getting this message. 1990, 2 years before I got clean, she and I took, because her little Honda 600 would not make it from San Francisco to Portland, we took Greyhound. And it was the most hellish trip of our lives on the bus. And I didn't know at the time. I'd like to say we were just, you know, we were gung-ho for recovery. I had no idea why we were even going. I don't know why. I just knew that it was kind of an adventure, and I was, you know, I took a couple days off work, and that was cool. And we finally got to Portland, Oregon, like, I don't know, it was like a day later than we were supposed to. And I just remember coming into the World Convention and just overwhelmed. And at that time, it probably wasn't as big as it is now, and just overwhelmed with people. And it was at that, I don't know how the conversation started, but I remember it was her and this other dude, and we're at a cafe in Portland, and they were telling me about Narcotics Anonymous, how this disease is all-inclusive, how they had one program, one fellowship, one sponsor, one set of steps, and all I could hear with my tiny little closed mind was, you're going to take me away from the meetings where the cute boys are. Why are you doing this to me? Because that wasn't Narcotics Anonymous where I got clean. It was another fellowship where all the things were happening. And I didn't know the difference. I was 19 when I came in. I was angry, very, very angry, very, very sick. I dressed all in black. I had big raccoon makeup, black hair, big jewelry all over my face. Like in the dark, if it was a candlelight meeting, all you could see was jewelry all over my face. And I didn't smile, and I kept you away because I wasn't sure if I wanted this. I didn't know. I didn't know that there was a boat to get into the middle of. I didn't understand that. When I came in, I did not get a sponsor. I did not follow any suggestions. I sat and I listened and I related and I wondered how you all got this and I wanted what you guys had, but I didn't want to do any work to get it. I wanted it to kind of come to me by osmosis. And so I started to develop these really wonderful ideas on my own that I was going to get a year clean, because for some reason that stuck out in my head as magical. And I was going to get a year clean. I was going to get a car. I was going to get an apartment in San Francisco, better friends, and learn how to use social. Because that's, you know, that's why we were here. I could learn how to use social. I got to Narcotics Anonymous by, like I said, this is a family disease for sure. I was an addict before I ever picked up. I know that. I know that to be true. And I grew up around the rooms of the other fellowship, which I'm so grateful for, because they were like family, and I related to them more than my real family, because they seemed to accept me on a level that no one else did. And I didn't understand that when I was a teenager, but my mom had this incredible sponsor who had she was trying to open up a treatment center, and she had a lot of literature, and her son and I was 16, and our son and I were getting high outside in the shed behind her house, and my mom and her, they were doing a fifth step, and how this works. I love to tell this story, though, because now when I think about it, it's funny, and she came out with this basic text, this little tiny book, and she said, open this when you're ready, and she walked away. You know, she said, this is going to be where you need to go, and because she knew, and I knew I was an addict. I knew. I just didn't want to stop. It was, it was working, I guess. Everything was working. And by the time I was 19, it was not working anymore. It was so not working. And I opened that book. And all I could do, I didn't understand the beginning pieces of it, but I did understand the stories, and I read the stories. And I thought, God, this is me. This is me. And they were talking about, like, some of the stories are really, you know, it was about the 60s and, you know, coming in. And I didn't relate to where they were, how they got there. I related to the feelings that they felt and what their problem was and what they were doing about it. And I asked my mom to take me to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And so I started going there, and I got into this fellowship when I was 19, and I stayed, and this is the part of my story that gets weird, that I stayed, and I stayed loaded for 5 years. I came to meetings. I stopped because in my head, and this is where, because my mind was so, these are my ideas, and this is how I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to stop these drugs. But I'm going to take these drugs. I became that guy that checked your medicine cabinet. I became that guy that took whoever's medication was, you know, hanging out. And I took it, and my justification for that was that my name wasn't on the prescription bottle, so I wasn't taking it. It was okay because you know, I really was. I was just kind of borrowing it, or, you know, it wasn't have anything to do with anything. And they said abstinence from all drugs. Well, I've stopped most of it. Isn't that enough? You know, God, can I have a buffer? I just want a buffer. I grew up my entire life with this message from my mom saying, "You just need a buffer. You need a buffer from life. You just need a buffer." And so that was, you know, I need a little cushion, and that was what I had. So, gosh. So for 5 years, I did service. I was GSR. I was secretary of meetings. I was on our activities committee in Berkeley, California. That's where I got clean. A little fellowship in Berkeley, California. And I did a lot of service, and I was loaded. And I'm sure that people knew. I'm sure people went, "Oh my God, you're not really nominating her for this," you know. And because I know for a fact, you know, I've been in meetings, and so-and-so will say to me, they'll be like, "So-and-so's loaded. Can you tell?" I'm like, "Well, good. They're here. They're here for an hour, and they're not driving, and they're here, and maybe they'll hear something." I have to not drop the F-bomb. I'm really good. I love that word. So for 5 years, I did this, you know, and a couple of really significant things happened. I went to a lot of conventions, and I love conventions because in workshops, when I actually sit and listen in workshops, I get so much. I get so much of the message of Narcotics Anonymous and the life-saving message of Narcotics Anonymous. There was a woman from my area who was speaking, and I don't remember what workshop this was, 2 years before I got clean, or a year and a half before I got clean, and she started talking about taking other people's medication in recovery. And how she came in and she called her sponsor, she got on, and she went to her home group and turned in her dirty chips. They were chips at the time. Chips. We had chips. And she got honest, and I thought, "Oh, God," it hit me like, it was like if someone took a brick and I swallowed it, that's what it felt like. Because it was the truth. It was what I had to do, and I knew that I had to get honest, because either I was going to do that or I was going to go back out and really go back out. And I probably wouldn't get an apartment in the city or better friends or anything. I would be dead. There's no way. 2 years after that, I was at one function. And in this 5 years, I've created a lot of wreckage in the rooms. Okay, I've created, it's not like I just, you know, sat there in my seat and did a little bit of service loaded. That was wreckage in itself. I had friends that I hurt. I scoped guys, took hostages, was taken hostage, played hostage and hostagey or whatever, you know. restraining orders happened. I created a lot of wreckage. I hurt a lot of people. I came in like a bull in a china shop and left a wake of trash in my way. And I didn't know that I was creating it, because it was all about me and my pain. I wanted to fix me. I wanted to not hurt anymore. So what does it matter if I go out with somebody who has 37 days clean? He's still shaking. What is that? It's all right. I'll move him in. It's okay. You know. So on October, somewhere in October, we had a function. October 2nd, we had this function, right? And I'm staying at my friend's house, and my friend's already, she's already relapsing and getting high, and I know she's a pharmacy. And she was gone. I was watching her house, and she's a pharmacy, and she's got some stuff. And so I found the stuff, and I took a lot of stuff. And I went to this function, this NA function, because I wanted to go, and I was going there by myself, and it was like I was in my own movie. I was a woman alone going to face the wreckage of my recovery. So I took a handful of whatever, you know, this stuff that she had. And I went to this, and I almost fell asleep at the dance. And I looked around at all these exes. All these exes and all this wreckage and all this, you know, and friends who, you know, people that I couldn't stand, people that couldn't stand me, and then friends that I had hurt. And I went home, and I've never felt so alone. I went back to her place, and I never felt so alone. And the next day I woke up, and the thought, I believe it was a power greater than myself saying, "Change or die." Bottom line, That's what you need to do, change or die. There's no in-between. There's no black and white. There's no other place to go. And I knew that Narcotics Anonymous was the last house on the block. I absolutely knew it. And I called my sponsor, and she took me to my home group. This is a few months later after that epiphany. I stopped using. I have not used and not had the desire to use since October 3rd, 1992. And somewhere in January, I called my sponsor and we went to my home group and I turned in my dirty key tags. And I was greeted with a lot of people who said, you know, thank God, welcome home. You know, this is it. Come on, you know, let's do this thing. And I was also greeted with, well, it wasn't like you shot dope. Why did you change your clean date? And yeah, and I thought, you know, for me, it was just like that was what I had to do because I was using. And so I'm realizing now my bright ideas aren't working, and I surrendered completely to Narcotics Anonymous, 100%. I'm going to work this program. I'm going to get in service. I'm going to do it clean. I'm going to take the suggestions of my sponsor, no matter how completely whacked out I think that they are. My sponsor, you know, she, one of my first ones before I got clean, planted the seed, and she said, get a home group, get a service commitment, call me every day, and start letting people get to know who you are. And I said, well, why do I need a home group? What is that? And she said, it's a place where you feel comfortable in and people see you. It's important for people to see you every week and see you show up and come back clean because they feel like it's safe for them to come back clean. And we make it our home group. We make it a welcoming place for people to come and kick back. Like my friend in my home group now today in Colorado, my home group is Ain't Dead Yet, by the way. I got to send a shout out to that, you know, I just do. It's to me, it's the best home group, and everybody's home group has got to be the best home group in their area. It just has to be that. It's like you have to have the best sponsor in the world, because if you don't get a new one, my gal in my home group, she says, a home group is a place where, you know, you can take your shoes off and kick back, and you're home. You're home. You're comfortable. And I have to have a comfortable place where I can, you know, where I can do my thing, where I can share, where I can be myself, you know, and I can recover. I have not found it necessary to go to any other fellowships for any manifestation of my disease that I've had. I have worked and I have struggled with food my entire life, and starving and throwing up, and yes, it gets graphic, but it's, you know, it's my story. And I've struggled with shoplifting. I've struggled with all these things. And when I got clean, I surrendered slowly and with claw marks every single one. I have worked the steps of Narcotics Anonymous around every single one because I have the disease of addiction, not the disease of food. I don't have the disease of meth, and I don't have the disease of club drugs or a club scene or, you know, or men or anything else. I have the disease of addiction, which lives right here, and I can work the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous around anything. And you know what? There is clean time and recovery in Narcotics Anonymous. Believe me, there is. Around 10 years clean, I recommitted to my program, and I don't suggest this to anyone. One of the things that I've learned is that I can't have a long-distance sponsor. And I met my husband, who is now my husband, and we were boyfriend and girlfriend at the time. We moved from our East Bay area to the Central Coast of California, and I had a sponsor who lived about 2.5 hours away, and I would call her every now and then. And I sponsored 6 women in the Central Coast, and I had no direction. I had no one that was watching my behavior. I had no one who I could talk to, no home base to go to as far as a sponsor. And it's not like I went and ran amok and did a bunch of crazy stuff, but I didn't have that connection. I didn't have somebody who was right there who I could go to, who saw me do my thing. When we moved to Colorado, I had 10 years clean in Colorado Springs, and I recommitted to my recovery. and I got a sponsor in my home group. And I have never not had a sponsor since then who is not in my area. My sponsor now is not in my home group, but she is in my area. She actually lives very close to me. I see her. She does service. She has what I want. She has a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor in Narcotics Anonymous. She works NA steps. She works out of the literature. She does service. She's very committed. And she's got clean time, and she hasn't picked up. My thing right now that I'm walking through another set of steps, which is really, really cool, and I'm on six. And love the sixth step. The sixth step is working me, let's put it that way. I'm doing things that I think, oh, my God, you know, oh, I don't want to do this, and then I just do it. Yesterday was a good example. Yesterday we volunteered to work the merchandise, and then they were doing a little walkthrough. I didn't know we were going to do that. I thought we were just going to put stuff in bags. I had no idea I was going to have to, like, look at something and learn something new and go around. I was like, this is like a job. This is like a new day on the job. Oh, my God. And so I go, and I think, I'm going to suck at this. I'm going to get everything wrong. People are going to yell at me. I can't do this. And, you know, and I went in there, and I almost ran. I almost thought they were going to say, I'm sorry, we're full up. Why don't you go and, you know, volunteer another time? And I'd be like, thank you. And then I'd slowly slip away. And that didn't happen. And they said, nope, you're over here at this register. And I helped. And the 2 hours went by so fast. I met some wonderful people. And I did okay, you know. I did okay. I let it go. I walked through this, and I just put my own ideas aside. Because my mind shuts all the time. All the time. I have here's Jenny's idea. And then here's Narcotics Anonymous. Here's what you all are telling me to do, and here's me. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to go do this. Narcotics Anonymous says go over to that register. I said, okay. So I do, you know, I do what people that I want, people that I have that I want, I follow, and I do what they do. I do what they do, and I listen to their suggestion. No matter how weird I think it is or how much I don't want to do it, I do it because I know it's going to keep me clean another day. And that's what this is about. This is staying clean another day. I have a wonderful husband. I have a good relationship with my husband. I have an honest relationship. I didn't take him hostage. He wouldn't be taken hostage. I was attracted to him early on because he had friends and he was involved and he had his own apartment and his own car, so I knew he wouldn't be moving in, and I would at least right away, you know. And part of that I didn't understand, and part of that was like, this is really cool, and it's continued to be that way. And it's not, you know, it's not perfect. It doesn't need to be. It's a human relationship. In Narcotics Anonymous, we're both addicts. You know, it's the odds are against us in a lot of ways. I work with my sponsor and other women in this program, and you know what? I work with my brothers in recovery too. I work with and I would not be clean today without my brothers in recovery. When I think of that, there's specific guys in my home group. I think, yeah, you know what? I love these dudes, and I stick with the women when I want to get deep down, intimate, but I cannot recover without my brothers in Narcotics Anonymous. Saying that, I go to my sponsor, I go to the women, he goes to the guys, he goes to his sponsor, and we bring that back together and do the best that we can do on a daily basis. It's not always beautiful, you know, but a lot of it is really awesome. I've done a lot of things, you know. When I came in here, I didn't do any of the stuff that I do now. When I came in here, all I did was smoke all the time. I like to go to cafes, you know. I'm a child of the 80s and just kind of stayed there. And when Al and I got together and we started doing stuff together, especially when we moved to Colorado, we started hiking and I started snowboarding. I started doing all this stuff that I never thought I would ever do. And now I absolutely love it. You know, I've opened up to a lot of new suggestions and doing a lot of different things, and that's been really, really cool. That's been different. My relationships have gotten amazing. Where it took about the first 10, 11 years to open up and get close to people, and then to get honest with those people and have these longer lasting relationships in my life, and now today my life is so full. I look in here, you know, and I'm sitting up here and I'm watching people walk in from my area, from my home group, from Colorado, from California, and I'm like, God, I got family all over the place. This is cool. This is so cool. And that's what happens in Narcotics Anonymous when you branch out and you reach out and you attend the conventions and the functions and you get involved and you see people and know people all over, and it's awesome because you can go to any place, anywhere in the world in Narcotics Anonymous and in a meeting and be comfortable where you are. You know your home, and you might not know anybody in there, but by the end of the meeting, you know them, you know. I am so, so grateful for this program. I'm so grateful for Narcotics Anonymous. I'm grateful for a relationship that I have with a God of my understanding. I didn't come up in here with one, and now my understanding is that I understand that there's something, and that's pretty cool, you know, because it was always something I could touch, something tangible, and basically something, you know, a person, a physical person or a substance. And it's not that now, you know. It's a intense feeling I'm taking care of no matter what. I love the steps. I love the traditions. I love doing service. I love going to area. I don't have an area commitment right now, and I've missed them because we've been out of town. But I sometimes go, and I've helped with literature when I don't have a commitment, and I've done that for like 4 years, and I listen, and I love it. I love it, and I just always want to stay involved. My way of keeping an open mind is doing what I did when I turned in my key tags, and that's being completely teachable by you guys around me. I stay here. I go to my home group, and I stay in my home group, and I have a commitment in my home group. I stay there. I sponsor women. I talk to my sponsor regularly. I keep working steps. I'm always on a set. You know, this is just for me what I have to do because I have to just stay active. And I incorporate the other steps as I need them during my day. You know, it's an ongoing thing. There's a step for everything. There's nothing that I haven't found to solve any problem that I have that isn't in the first 103 pages of our basic text. Not, you know, might be a little off in the sixth edition, but the first 103 pages, there's nothing that has not solved my problem. And that text is amazing. I'm so grateful to be here. I'm so grateful y'all came here. I thought it was going to be like me and a bunch of crickets. I really, you know, because it just because, you know, I'm not, you know, I got to go all over the place. But thank you so much for letting me be here and share my experience, strength, and hope with you guys.
I'm Karen. I'm an addict. Meeting goes till, I think, 11:30. So we actually, I'm so used to long-winded people. Oh, my God, where'd you come from? You did, but he ended early. So we can maybe open up the meeting if anybody wants to share about being open-minded or being closed for repairs. Nope, but everyone's leaving. Cool. All right. No? I'm going to open it up. Anybody want to share? Meeting's not over. Go ahead.
Hello, everyone. My name is Daryl S. from Chicago. Truly grateful recovering addict. Whew. Man, this is a great thing. Open-mindedness. You know, I could really relate, you know, to a lot of the things that they were saying up here, because when I first came up in here, my whole thing, I already had a plan. My plan, which was similar to a lot of people's, was learn how to use right. If y'all didn't use it all, then y'all could definitely show me how just to use a little bit. And then I was going to go back out there. One meeting too many, that's what happened with me. One need too many. I actually came here, and for some reason, the weird thing happened. I began to actually listen something was happening. I mean, it was something that I came in 1987. I was, you know, I'm going to tell you this little thing right here. They told me, play the tape all the way out. I had a partner who came in the same day as me. We was here for about 6 weeks. And I asked him first, do you know what this tape is? And he told me, no, I was going to ask you. We both made a pact. When we find out where this tape is, we're not going to pay for it. Only one of us will buy the tape, and then we'll let the other one have it. Hey, we had to keep coming back to get the tape. I had a sponsor who told me after I realized what was going on, he said, Daryl, don't play the tape out. You need to play the end of the tape. Stay there. Whenever you feel like using, don't play the tape out, because you will get stuck. Play the end of the tape. Keep it real simple. Open-mindedness is something that today I still have. I still make meetings. I still listen to everything that I possibly can. I don't throw nothing away. I keep it all on the shelf because I don't know when or when I might need to use it. I am really grateful. I'm still learning in these rooms how to live life outside these rooms. And with that, I keep coming back.
My name's Jerry Red. I'm an addict. I said, thank God I'm clean. I guess I used to be Jerry Red. I'm kind of Jerry White now, which is better than Jerry Nothing, I think. You know, this is just amazing. This is my third World Convention. My clean date is July 11th, 1991. Yeah. I just celebrated 20 years, and at my anniversary, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, and I ended up having five of my sponsees speak. And these five guys carry the message of N.A., and they say, well, Jerry tells me to do this, and Jerry tells me to be careful, and Jerry tells me, it's kind of funny, I don't remember telling them to do these things. But you know what? They managed to stay clean. Some relapse. You know, for 7 years, I lied about my clean date. You know, I actually got clean on June 18th, 1991, which was Father's Day. And I thought I was doing this for my father. And 3 weeks later, I let the disease get in my head. And I said, I'm going to do it one more time. You know how that works. But when I got high that time, I went downstairs, and my mother was there, and I said, look, I'm getting high again. What do I do? And she goes, why don't you get on your knees and pray? So I got on my knees and prayed. The next night, I was very angry about what I did, and I got clean in New York City. My sponsor took me to St. Mark's Place. It's between A, B, and C. It used to be 24 hours a day meetings, and you can go up there and there'd be people throwing up, people going to the bathrooms. I mean, it was really raw. But you know what? I was real angry, and the guy said, take the chair and throw it against the wall. And I started taking a chair, and I was throwing it against the wall, and I was so angry about it. I never told anybody about it. So I had about 6-7 years clean. I was with my wife, and, you know, it finally got to a point that it was eating at me. Every time I got my coin, my disease kept telling me, look, you're still lying to yourself. You're lying to all the people in front of you about being clean. And I remember when I got honest about it, it was so funny. I didn't know how people were going to react. But everybody made it seem like it wasn't a big deal. But it was a big deal to me, you know, because if you don't stay honest about what you're doing, then it doesn't work. Now I'm in a relationship with my wife. Me and my wife has 25 years clean, or 24 years clean. She'll have 25. I just had 20. We met when we had 8 and 6 years, or 10 and 6, something like that. But we have a 10-year-old son. My 10-year-old son, he's a wonderful boy. He has autism. He actually has Asperger's. I don't know if you know the difference, but an Asperger child has, like they say, Albert Einstein has Asperger's. So, you know, it's kind of weird when your son knows more about life than I do. He's smarter than me. It's almost a curse, you know. And it's tough. You know, we came up here. We decided to take a two-week vacation, and we decided in our vacation here at the World Convention. So we came here 2 weeks ago, and we went to the Grand Canyon. We went to Vegas, and we were in L.A. And, you know, I tell my wife I'm frazzled, you know, being in a hotel room for 2 weeks with somebody. And it's not really them. It's me. You know, I heard a couple people sharing, you know. like, I don't know why. I used to tell my sponsor, I'm angry. And he said, well, you know what? Go sit in your rocking chair in your backyard, and when you're done being angry, you can give me a call, and we can move on. And I'd be like, what do you mean? He goes, it's up to you how long you want to stay angry for. But sometimes, you know what? If I allow myself, my sponsor tells me all the time, either you're part of the problem or you're part of the solution. You know, and it's really easy for me to become part of the problem. When it's Jerry's will, it's the problem. When it's God's will, it's the solution. You know, about 3 years ago, I had 18 years clean, and I hit a bump in the road. You know, they talk about those other addictions, you know, food, sex, money, credit cards. I had gotten caught up in one of those things. And you know what? I guess it's a problem when your life's unmanageable. My sponsor tells me unmanageability starts with a knot in your stomach, you know. And I had a big knot in my stomach. I was lying to my sponsor. I was lying to my wife. And it affected all of my affairs. And, my sponsor said, what are you going to do about it? You know, and I said, I need to recommit myself. And it started with step one. You know, whenever I have a problem, you know, we can make amends. We can take an inventory. But the first thing my sponsor said, whenever you have an issue, start to step one. You know what? No matter what it is, you got to first say, I'm powerless, and it's making my life manageable. Then what do you do next? You know, you got to believe that if you turn it over, it'll get better. You take that inventory, you make amends. I don't have to wait till the end of the day to make amends to somebody. You know, at the same time, when you say you're sorry to somebody, if all you say you're sorry and you do it again, well, then you're really not working the program. Today my life is really good. I am blessed. You know, my mom had an opportunity to see me stay clean for 17 years before she passed away. And when she passed away, I was at her bedside. And, one of the last things she said to me was, I love you. You know, and it was real important that, you know, that you have people in your family that can love you. You know, I have a nephew who I took to a couple NA meetings a few years ago, and now he's in jail for murder. And, he made a decision, you know, to use. And when we use, that's the kind of place we put ourselves around, you know. Those people, places, and things can lead to those kind of things. And, I just want to come up and speak. It was kind of funny, like, we got here, and then between having my son with us, it's hard for us to get here. You know, last night we came to the main speaker meeting. We looked at our son in the hotel room for a couple of hours, and we got back. He said he was afraid. This is the first time I've taken my son to a meeting since he was about 3 years old, because I was trying not to tell him that I'm an addict. You know, I think the longer I wait to tell him that, the harder it is. I don't know if he has his headphones on, he's listening to me or not, but you know what? It's good that I can sit here and, you know, I'm not embarrassed to be an addict today. You know, I don't wear key tags on my chain anymore because I'm a financial advisor. You know, I don't know if somebody wants to give me money. one time nobody gave me $5, let alone $100,000, you know. The funny part is, you know, these people that I have clients have $1 million with me, they know I'm in recovery. Somewhere along the time, you know, it came to a point where I had to tell them either we were at a banquet or I took them out. And I told them I don't drink anymore. And I told them that, you know, I didn't drugs, you know, and tell them I smoked crack because I don't know if they would want me to keep their money. But it's just kind of cool, you know. It's cool that I can come here. And like you shared, you had a really good message, by the way. And the girls shared after you, it was really wonderful. You know, no matter what anybody shares, I can identify with it. You know, they always say if you're coming up, you'll hear your own story. You know, I have four sisters. When I grew up, you know, I had red hair, freckles, four sisters. I always felt different then, you know. And I remember I was in a detox, and I heard my story. And I heard my story from a black woman. You know, she had four brothers. She was the darker skin. Everybody else was lighter skin. I used to make fun of her because she was the darker skin. But it was so similar to my story. You know, I went up to her after the meeting, and she looked at me and she said, you heard your story, didn't you? And I said, yeah, I did. I said, did you talk to my mother? I said, because I thought, like, you know, the way she told the story, it sounds so much to my story, you know. But what I'm trying to say, it doesn't matter if you're white or black. It doesn't matter if you're a guy or a girl. You know, we have the disease of addiction. You know, it's not prejudiced to anybody or anything. But I do know if we come here on a regular basis, if I don't use, I can stay clean one day at a time. And when I stay clean one day at a time, I'm in the solution. And like we were talking about, closed-minded, you know, 3 years ago, I was in a position where, what am I going to do? You know, I decided to go to more meetings. I decided to work the steps again with my sponsor. Let's say I sponsor like 10 guys. And I go to 5-6 meetings a week. You know, when I thought, like, you know, 20 years clean, why should I go to 5-6 meetings a week? You know what? Every time I go to a meeting, it helps me. You know, it reaffirms that I'm an addict. It reaffirms that if I come here on a regular basis, that I can stay clean. You know what? You know, you'll get in this program when you gather what you put into it. You know? So whether you have one day clean or 20 years clean, you know, if you keep coming here, your life will get better. You know, me and my wife, our wedding vows had spiritual principles written into our vows. We sat in front of 100 people and we used this program, and we still do. You know what? There's many times I have to apologize to my wife for what I say, you know, or the way I act. But you know what? Today I'm doing better with that. And even today, we got up this morning, we sat together and said, okay, how can we make this work? We decided to bring our son with us to the meeting. You know, and he's got walking headphones, he's got his Game Boy, and, you know, he can do that or he can listen, you know. But I'm not embarrassed that he sit up here. This is a real cool place, you know. Narcotics Anonymous, without a doubt, I'd be dead if it wasn't for N.A. You know, I got clean when I was 29 and a half. You know, I'll be 50 in October. And my life is beyond my wildest dreams. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Tommy. I'm an addict, too. Grateful to a power greater than myself called Narcotics Anonymous that guided me in getting the God of my understanding and you people teach me how to live this new way of life one day at a time. You know, closed-mindedness. I remember thinking that, how am I closed-minded? I'm not ignorant. I'm not this. I only had one desire, and that was to get one more all day long, every day. You see. And I didn't think anything was wrong with me. I always thought something was wrong with everybody else because when I was going to reach, I didn't understand when people say, you know, your skin is turning colors. And I had gotten that golden hue that you have when you shoot heroin all day, every day. I didn't know it was because my liver was going bad and that I was on my way out of this world in death. But I kept doing what I needed to do to keep getting high. It didn't make me any difference about getting arrested. It didn't make me any difference about stealing their stuff because I could explain to you why I had to steal your shit. You see, you really didn't need it as much as I did. And the closed-mindedness kept me stuck in that rut. You see, it wasn't until I walked into these doors of Narcotics Anonymous that I got an opportunity to hear some other people tell me, you know, you got to listen to what the message is. And I would just look at him like, you know, another motherfucker with some bullshit. You see? But the thing about it is, by getting open-minded, I was able to hear not only my story, but a solution to the dilemma that had been affecting me in my life for so many years. You see, low self-esteem was just a part of the problem, you see, because I told myself those lies for so many years, you know, those narcissistic lies that, you know, everybody know I'm good looking, you know, everybody know I'm this, but I didn't believe I was shit when I got by myself, you see. So when I was by myself, I couldn't lie to myself, you see. When I would be around you, I could tell you all this good shit, sound real clever, and couldn't work shit by myself. And the thing about it is that people in Narcotics Anonymous talked about opening up your mind to new ideas, new behaviors. Make a change in how you see things. Don't even think about wanting to react to something that you don't like. Stop and tell somebody about how you feel it. Well, see, that was something that I never did, was tell anybody how I felt. You see, because my whole life from the time I was a little boy in grammar school was a total lie. You see, I always had a reason for why I did this, and it was always somebody else's fault because I never knew how to take responsibility for my own actions. I always wanted you to be at fault for whatever happened to me because what was happening for me was something that you caused. You didn't let me get the money that I was trying to steal. You were taking me. My parents didn't do right because they found out I was going into the store stealing belts so I could have belts and different shit, and they would make me take them back to the store, and I'd go in the store, drop them on the floor, and walk out. And my grandmama said, oh, we're going to play that shit, son. Pick them damn belts up and walk up to the man and tell him. So I said, well, sir, and I'd start crying. I said, I'm sorry. I picked up these belts by accident. And they would say the same thing, you know, oh, that is wonderful. He's so honest. And then when I wasn't around them, I went and did the same shit all over again. The punishment didn't mean shit because, see, back then you got your ass whooped with a hand cord, you see. It wasn't none of that time out shit, you know. Like, you know, you got fucked up. And, yeah, and they sent us to a Catholic grammar school and high school. where they beat the shit out of you in grammar school, and then call your parents, and my mother would bring her butt up in there and whoop me with an iron cord in front of the class. So, you know, that made me bitter. It didn't change any of the behavior I had. And then she had the audacity to send me to a school, a high school run by Franciscan monks. Those were the meanest son of a bitches I ever had in my life. And they were violent, you know. And they would beat the hell out of you and didn't make any difference to you. But the thing about it, with all of those types of behavior modifications, it didn't do anything to change me. The only thing that worked on changing me is when I came into these rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, and I learned how to live without the use of drugs. I learned how to be a better person for myself. Not for you to pat me on the back, but for me to feel good about myself on the inside. That was the change that I just always wanted and didn't know how to achieve. But through Narcotics Anonymous, developing an open mind, taking the suggestions that they are. And see, I have to love you all for saying it in that manner. First off, if you told me this is what you got to do, I would have said, fuck you. But the thing about it is, you made it real simple. You said, it's only a suggestion, which means I could use it if I want to, or I don't have to take the suggestion, and I could keep getting my ass kicked. So I started listening to the suggestions, and I said, damn, this shit really worked. You know, I started feeling better about myself. And, you know, I had burned all my bridges. I came in without a job. And I started working. I had run over shoes. And it's so funny. I don't know why it came back to me. I had some gym shoes when I came in here that, you know, some of you all may not know nothing about putting cardboard in the bottom of your shoes. But it's wet outside and snow. So the cardboard has got a hole in it, and I don't want nobody to see my shoes, so I put my shoes behind me up underneath the chair. I forgot the people that's behind me can see the holes in the shoe. You see. And so as a result, somebody said, well, until you get some money, why don't you go to one of those resale stores and buy you some clothes? I said, well, you know, do you know who I am? And they said, one person was nice enough to say no. But the rest of them said, yeah, you're a dope fiend that ain't got shit, didn't have shit, and if you keep going like this, you're never going to have shit. So it really pissed me off. So I went to a store called Amvets in Chicago, and I asked the people if they had some clothes that just came in that wasn't all wore out. So these ladies came and saw me and was talking to me because I could flirt real good with women. And so they said, yeah, they went in the back and came out with sport coats, suits, pants. And they said, you can make them fit a lot better if you take them and have them tailored. And I did that. I bought 4 sport coats, 3 suits. She gave me 4 shirts, and I bought 5 shirts. Got 2 pair of shoes. Everybody thought I had a whole lot of money around the program because I was walking around shop every day. I started seeing somebody that I was liking now. You see, I'd look in the mirror, and I liked what I saw. You see, that's where the open-mindedness comes in. I no longer disliked myself, felt sorry for myself, or hated myself. I started to like me. And as a result of starting to like me, I started doing things to improve my life in Narcotics Anonymous by not using, staying away from those people, places, and things, and not worrying about what you thought of me, but enjoying how I was starting to feel about myself. You see, like I said early on, you know, I didn't like me. My self-esteem was like this. I don't know how many of you all had an old car that had the muffler falling down and you tied it up with wire and at nighttime you see the sparks. Well, that's the way my self-esteem was when I was walking down the street at nighttime. It would make those sparks behind me and you would see the sparks just going like mad. As a result of this program, the muffler got clamps on it, and my self-esteem got clamps and was attached to my body and to my heart and my soul. And as a result, I started feeling better about me. And when I started feeling better about me, I was able to do some of the suggestions that they made about, you know, getting involved in service, helping somebody else, you see. And in helping somebody else, it took the focus off me, so I wasn't thinking about my shit all the time, but how I could help somebody else. You see, this program is so awesome that it keeps you from looking at the negative side of yourself by helping somebody else. that you use what you tell them to help them to help yourself also. And that's why they say this is a self-help program and that it works if you work it. Because if you sit up there and just moan, groan, and woe is me, nothing changes but the location. And you keep going to a new location because that's what I was good for. I changed women because they had apartments and I'd have a place to stay for a little while, you see. But because I never had any money, and if I did get some money, it was all about me doing what I needed for me, not for the household. Today, all of those things have changed that I got a loving and caring wife that I'm really grateful for. And the thing about it is, she loves me too. She said that when before I took her to the World Convention in Paris, she went with me to my daughter's graduation from Northern University. And it was so funny because that same evening I was the speaker at an NA function, and it was being held in the Palmer House. And so we get back, and she said, well, where's this place you got to speak? I said, well, we're in the Palmer House. We got a room downtown Chicago. And I'm looking over there, and how in the hell am I going to talk about being an addict? And I ain't never talked to her about this shit. And I was trying to talk without going into details about what got me there. And so I think I talked the shortest time in my life, about 35 minutes. And when I got through, she walked up and she said, I think we need to talk. You know, I didn't know anything about this. And then after I told her a little bit, you know, I didn't want to give her too much information to run her off. She said, you know, you're pretty smart. I said, what do you mean? She said, you let me get to know you before you let me find out anything about the negative side of your life. She said, that was Narcotics Anonymous that taught me how to do that. That wasn't me coming up with that solution. You know, they say that you don't have to share every damn thing that happened all at one time to give the people enough information to say, I don't want to be around your ass. You see. You give them enough information to like you first. Learn to see some good sides of you so that you can see those same good sides about yourself and start the improvement of your life, and they don't have no problem with being around. See, this program is so awesome. It took me years to even talk about some things that I just wanted to talk about the shit that I thought people wanted to hear. And see, back in the 70s, I was training the senior medical students out of Presbyterian School of Medicine. And I thought I was the shit. You couldn't tell me nothing. And the thing about it is that they even wanted me to, they did a thing in Dollars and Cents magazine back in 79, and they messed around there and had me, sent me papers for Who's Who in Illinois and all of that shit. See, I didn't ever tell anybody about that when I first came in the rooms. You know, matter of fact, it was about 16 years. I was here about 16 years before I talked about something like that. And that was about 7 years ago, the first time I spoke about it. But the thing is that those were some of the things. And somebody said, why didn't you never said anything about that? Well, see, they forgot about that part about shame and guilt. You see, the shame and guilt that no matter how high we could go, it always brought us really low. And the thing is that the shame and guilt affected me so badly, I didn't want anybody to ever know that I had did under those things. You know, after being in this program, I went back to school and got my doctorate. But I didn't like talking about all of those things because one of the things is that you have to be careful even telling people that you had some, you know, you went back to school because people, oh, that motherfucker think he better than me, I don't know. You see. So this program can do for you what you see it doing to countless of thousands of people that come into your lives if you stay in Narcotics Anonymous. You'll see the change in a personality. You'll see the caring about another person. Because when we see a person come in the door one day clean, we care enough about them to put them up on our arms. Take them out to have something to eat with us. We're going to the show. I don't have no money. Don't worry about it. We take you with us. And we take them back home to wherever they have to go. You see. Never had that type of love and caring. You see, but the open-mindedness of this program says that we can only keep what we have by giving it away. And if I don't share what I've learned how to do because someone was gracious enough to share those certain things with me, then I'm making a mockery of the program. This program has helped me, you, and everybody that walks through these doors to make a change that has helped them to improve their lives, to learn how to love another person instead of just themselves. Because there was a bitch, you know, going home talking about how much I love myself and the only person I'm fucking is me. I can laugh about it now, but it was some serious ass shit when it was going on. But just keep coming back. This program can help anybody. Willingness is what you got to have. Because if you don't have the willingness to want to change, guess what? You can beat your head up against a brick wall and say that it don't hurt. But when you look in the mirror and you see all them fucking knots, you be talking about, who the fuck hit me in the head? You fool. And I'll keep coming back.
That is all the time we have for. We will be closing the meeting, and I would like you to join together to close the meeting with a serenity prayer. Oh, wait. Where's Ken? Ken was asked to read. We do recover.
Okay, we're all connected now. Thank you. I'm an addict. My name is Ken.
Hi, Ken.
Hi, family. We do recover. When at the end of the road we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative. Either go on as best we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous. Can we have a moment of silence? And we'll follow that with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Keep coming back, works you work it.
Thank you, Karen.